AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. 1 hour. Actually, less than an hour to go to get USDA's first official look at the 2022-23 marketing year for corn, soybeans, wheat, and cotton. We'll get you ready for that. And 2022 is off to a great start for beef exports, but not so much for pork shipments. We'll dig into that. And let's talk about keeping kids safe this planting season.
Live from the springtime summer breakout via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Aaron Borer from the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Then Chip and I will preview today's WASDE report from USDA. Later, Scott Heiberger from the National Children's Center for Rural and Agricultural Health and Safety. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Thank Woo-hoo. You very much, buddy. Yeah. We have been talking about May 12th since March 31st in the grain markets.
Mm-hmm.
After we got the prospective plantings report, it was all on and all about we got to wait until May 12th and get that first official look at the 2022-23 marketing year for corn and soybeans in particular. And with corn acres coming in below trade expectations, with bean acres coming in above trade expectations, intentions coming in above expectations, this report has the potential to be a trend accelerator or a trend changer. It really does. We'll talk about it in the third segment here this morning, but boy, there are some key numbers that we need to focus on. So good stuff. And the export demand for beef, boy, it is really helping this market out. I don't think there's any question about it. If we didn't have the exports that we've got right now, Davis, I have a feeling that we would not have the prices that we've got, and some would argue that prices that we've got right now aren't good enough anyway. So, but we'll talk about the beef market and the pork export market in just a little bit.
Outstanding. So, that sounds great. Yeah. I'm gonna stick around for that.
Great.
You know, I'm gonna stay tuned in. That's what I'm gonna do.
I'm definitely going to need your help as we're talking about the USDA report. So,
looking
you better
forward to
stick
that.
Around.
I'm looking All forward right. to that. Yeah.
Good deal. All right, what you got in the news?
Chip, the Labor Department said the U.S. Producer Price Index, which generally reflects supply conditions in the economy, increased a seasonally adjusted 0.5% in April from the prior month. That's the lowest rate of increase since September 2021, but higher than the average monthly gain in the 2 years before the pandemic. Producer prices rose 11% on a 12-month basis in April. That's the fifth consecutive double-digit gain, Chip.
Yeah, and that double-digit gain in producer prices is going to be passed on to consumers. So, and it will be passed on to consumers this month. Therefore, that inflation number for May that we get in, you know, the first few days of June, it's going to continue to show the stress of inflation. I just don't think there's any way around it. We're not slowing this down yet. And that 11%. Man, the market is taking it well. The equities are taking it well. The Dow's up like 50 points. And that just means that most know it's bad out there, and it should be built into the markets.
Well, the U.S. federal government's budget deficit has contracted by some $1.57 trillion so far this fiscal year, driven by record receipts from a strong economy and a slowdown in spending. As pandemic-era programs fade, the deficit dropped to $360 billion over the 7 months from October through April. That's according to Treasury Department data released yesterday.
Yeah. Let's just be clear on this, though. We've still got a deficit. It's not that we've reduced the debt. we've still got a deficit that we are dealing with. And it's because it's spend. Right. And we're coming off a period of record spending under the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. And the first year of the Biden administration, record spending levels. So a reduction in the deficit spending?
Mm-hmm.
Well, good, but it doesn't mean as much as the administration is making it out to be.
The International Energy Agency said on Thursday lower output from Russia due to the fallout from its invasion of Ukraine will not leave the world short of oil as supply ramps up elsewhere and Chinese lockdowns tamp down demand. The assessment by the Paris-based agency suggests the economic impact from further sanctions on Russian energy mulled by the European Union could be limited. The Ukrainian military pressed its counteroffensive against Russian troops Wednesday, pushing them back from the northeastern city of Kharkiv in a move that observers say could propel the conflict into a new phase, as U.S. intelligence officials warned that Moscow was preparing for a protracted war. President Biden visited a farm Wednesday in Kankakee, Illinois, and as expected, unveiled policies to increase harvests in ways that the administration believes could also help to reduce grocery bills at home. The president said, quote, I stand here today to thank American farmers who are the breadbasket of democracy. We can make sure that American ag exports will make up for the gap in Ukrainian supplies. Biden announced three policy measures, including doubling funding for domestic fertilizer production, greater access to farm management tools, and efforts to increase the number of counties eligible for double cropping insurance. Chip.
We can talk about this in segment three some too, because increasing the counties eligible for double cropping, I think I can explain why it really doesn't matter.
Very good. China's ag ministry. Yeah, do you want to get to Greg? I think we've got Greg.
Yeah,
we should
do that. I lost track of the time there. Yeah, sorry.
I got you.
All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. How you doing, buddy?
Well, good. I'm glad Davis didn't forget totally about me.
Sorry about that, man. Okay, let's talk about beef prices and how they are competing.
Yeah, you know, you talk about the stress of inflation. And Chip, I think I may have found just a small silver lining for beef and pork. So food inflation appears to be having a greater impact on plant-based proteins than on the real stuff, right? So results from April show the average price for plant-based proteins was $8.15 a pound, and that compares to a price of $4.37 for meat prices across all cuts and all kinds, both fixed and random weight. So nearly double, right? And the April price was actually down 8 cents for the alt meat price. So April sales, plant-based proteins totaled $33 million. So that's down nearly 13% from last year and down 8% from 2 years ago. $33 million sounds like a lot until you compare it to the $6.5 billion in all meat sales. Okay. So, dollar sales for all meats was up 7.5%, and the retail supply chain moved 1.5 billion pounds through the system, coming within 3% of last year's total, Chip. So, good numbers. I mean, you know, in relation to the inflation we're seeing. Demand for beef is still strong. Demand
still
for pork
good.
Is still strong. Absolutely.
Yeah.
People have to eat.
You know, regardless that's exactly going, right, right, Greg. Exactly. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to be talking with Aaron Bohr from the U.S. Meat Export Federation next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by AltoSid IGR, an easy-to-use feed-through IGR to control horn fly populations. AltoSid IGR delivers consistent results that show.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with us.
10-4.
Yeah, man. All right. Let's talk about some demand for U.S. beef and U.S. pork. We've got Erin Bohr. She is the Vice President for Economic Analysis at the U.S. Meat Export Federation, and she joins us right now. Erin, welcome to AgriTalk.
All right. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Glad that you are here. Let's start with comparatively the bright spot, and that is beef. And year to date, overall beef export demand is really very good, isn't it?
Yeah, fantastic. Just kind of continue to amaze every month. And especially when you're like me and always looking for the negatives. It has just been incredible to see this global beef demand firing on, you know, almost across the board.
Right, right. How do things compare on total shipments in the latest month? The latest month that data is available is April, right? Or was it March? It was March.
Yeah, it was just March. And yeah, the stats are always in the rearview mirror, but in March, when you look at beef and beef variety meats combined, they were still up 1% from big totals year on year. But the big story here has been value, and still up by a third. Yeah. So for context, I mean, we really started to see our U.S. beef prices run from about April, from about a year ago. And on the export prices, those continued to just accelerate every month until about November. And then we've been kind of bouncing around at this new higher price range. So the year-on-year numbers are still really strong, and that's going to be the case kind of until mid-year. But, okay. I mean, it's still an incredible story, and those international customers have paid significantly higher prices. And what we kept hearing from our team, you know, in the markets is that the price wasn't a pushback point. They still hadn't been able to get everything they wanted, believe it or not. So The shipping and logistical constraints that we hear about every day from the exporters, we are also hearing about daily from our international staff on the ground, and just that frustration of not being able to get all the product they need. So again, price wasn't the pushback. It's like, how can I get more?
Wow.
How do
we explain this, Erin, that they're not pushing back on price? Is it just, could it be that they've just kind of resigned to the fact that the supply chain disruptions are creating some scarcity? Therefore, if you want it and it's available, you just buy it regardless of price?
Yeah, I think part of it has been kind of a momentum play. And it is interesting because a lot of our big growth drivers, like, say, for example, Korea, they haven't seen the food service come back yet. So in the United States, we know part of that price run was because we had this immediate return to food service almost overnight, the stimulus money, everything else we kept spending at retail. So this would be, you know, a year ago. And that supported prices. But in like Korea, they were still dealing with COVID last year. They just finally lifted restrictions this April. So you can argue we still have that revenge spending yet to come. And it was really strong retail demand. And so, I mean, we also have to remember U.S. beef is still competitively priced against domestic product. And so that Hanwoo price was very strong through COVID. So you can maybe look at that as not having consumer pushback because they did want to have a good meal at home. We've taught them how to conveniently cook U.S. beef. We've been educating on the nutrition side, you know, all of this. So yes, I think there was the wanting to treat yourself to a restaurant meal at home in the Korea case. I mean, food service continued. It had just been below COVID levels. And then a momentum play. So those importers were kind of nervous about getting what they needed because of the China factor. And right. So they were willing to, you know, pay that higher price to make sure they got product, not to mention the supply chain headaches.
Right, right. The quality of U.S. beef really plays well in markets like South Korea, Japan, China, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yep. And that is our global comparative advantage, but definitely in Asia. And they like that fat, and that's their domestic product, you know, Hanwoo, Wagyu, these grain-fed animals, that's their preference. And so we're able to ship short play, all of the chuck items, chuck short ribs, pretty fatty products into these markets, and that's what they love. And we've seen them evolve, you know, from thin meats to more steak cuts, but still of this variety of items, not like, well, they love ribeyes as well, but, you know, exporting more out of the front end and making it steakable. So we've been able to penetrate on the thin meats, but also graduate them into more of a thick cut and steak cut.
Gotcha. Gotcha. What are the headwinds? It's the supply chain. It's the ability to deliver product out there. But in developing the markets, or the markets that are that are open to U.S. beef, are we seeing any country show resistance to price?
Yeah, I mean, my outlook gets clouded, and okay. I mean, still it's pretty. It turns into kind of a mixed picture. So, for example, the Middle East. So if we want to talk about a region that's very interesting with high oil prices, we've seen food service demand quite strong there and starting to see more U.S. beef back into that region and even livers into Egypt. Obviously, a need for that high quality protein. Mix that in with, you know, what's going on the wheat side. And so it's kind of fascinating as you look around the world, there's different things happening everywhere. Closer to home, the Caribbean, Dominican Republic, that region is seeing strong food service recovery. And so some demand for our product there. They also have limited local supplies, obviously, including on the pork side with the ASF factor in the Dominican. So you have that play going on. Central America has been incredible, and we're kind of penetrating at all levels there. Zero tariffs into that CAFTA DR region, so helping for beef and pork. And then, you know, the big mover last year, well, Korea and China. China is its own its own deal, but we can look at it as maybe it's at its worst now, I hope. I hope for the people living there, my goodness, and for our team. Yep. But if we think about, you know, the potential, if and when they, you know, let these people go, and the revenge spending at food service, you know, we were on with our team just last week, I think, and they were saying, you know, the importers are still optimistic that this market will just kind of explode whenever it can. And the other fascinating thing there is that our shipments have kept going week in and week out. And we know over 80% of our beef goes to Shanghai, or did. And so somehow they're managing, we know it's kind of a disaster, but they're managing to get that product at least shipped.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit more specifically about pork, but how much value are beef exports adding to cattle right now?
Yeah, this has just been kind of mind-blowing. So let's just look at that first quarter average, and this is just that beef export value spread across our fed kill in that same period. So it's nothing funky, and it averaged $474.10 per head. And that was up 41%, or an increase of $138.65 per head is that export translated across production. Yeah.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Okay, we've got a couple of minutes left here, Aaron. Let's get to pork. It's not as strong of a story, but it's still adding value.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, pork, you know, I'm kind of more optimistic by the day here on a turnaround. So I think also for context, last year was incredible because what happened is we were basically able to offset that plummeting demand in China, which we knew was going to happen, but really falling off a cliff, we were able to offset that even at higher prices for exports into the rest of the world, which is pretty impressive when we think about it. So Western Hemisphere was obviously huge in that, which we also expected. You had some pent-up demand there. You had some domestic production challenges, really kind of across the whole region, including in Mexico. And it just kind of, it's perfect because we need their labor. For example, Mexico, we need to ship those chilled bone-in hams and combos down there. We don't have the labor. Labor situation's improving, but we still need labor in Mexico to debone. Right. They need the product to go into their consumer market for affordable protein. So all these hammed in every form processed products into the Mexican market, that demand is still there. There's still room to grow that consumption. Wow. Central America, DR, all of these regions. And then if we think about the potential for growth, Europe hit hard by the Ukraine situation. But sows in Europe were already down 3.6% in December and contraction expected in our biggest competitor's market. So we should see improving competitiveness.
What, real quickly, what do pork exports add to the value of a hog?
Yeah, so Q1 was $54.18 for every head slaughtered, and that was down 18. About $5.91.
Aaron, great information. Thank you so much. Aaron Bohr from the U.S. Meat Export Federation.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us. Beej, I mean, we got to focus on wheat here again. More new highs. It's what a move.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty impressive, Chip. And this comes ahead of USDA's reports this morning. We'll see what the first winter wheat crop estimates are. You know, we're anticipating that it'll come in lower than what the average trade estimate is and potentially significantly lower. But there's a lot of uncertainties with what USDA is going to do with the HRW crop yield and acreage-wise. So that, a lot of uncertainty there.
Yeah, there certainly is. And there's a huge range on trade expectations there. So we'll, Davis and I will get into that in just a little bit. We've got some strength in the corn market. We've got mixed trade going in soybeans. Soybean oil is under some pressure. We've got some strength in soybean meal. Looks like a little spread unwinding in the products.
Yeah, definitely. With that, you know, unwinding the long soy oil, short meal spreads. Meal's been taking it on the chin here recently, but trading firmer here mid-morning, like you mentioned.
Yeah, well, the cattlemen, hog producers had a chance to buy July meal under $400 yesterday. It wouldn't surprise me if they're not getting a little bit of coverage in there. What's happening in the livestock trade?
No, more of the same, to be honest with you. Jeez. The hog market can't get out of its own way. Trading moderately to sharply lower. So just a continuation there of the beatdown that we've seen here recently. And June hogs are now fully under the cash index and very unusual for this time of year. It really, you know, speaks to the pessimism there. And then the cattle market weaker as well this morning with moderate to heavy losses there as well.
Yeah, feeders seem really sensitive to what's going on in corn right now. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
Well, we try not to make the news.
you know, rendering is more what it's more milieu here on AgriTalk. AgriTalk, thanks for joining us, everyone, this
that
morning.
That bump was very appropriate after talking with Henderson about what's going on in meat prices, and then talking the exports with Aaron Moore from U.S. Meat Export Fed. Yeah, yeah, good stuff.
I admit I've got a nice, big, thick Iowa loin chop upstairs thawing on the counter right now. Pulled it out of the freezer this morning. Put it on a little plate on the counter. I'm going to have you a little pork for lunch.
You may be the Iowa pork producers VIP, dude. MVP.
I don't need the accolades, you know, the praise, the buildup. I just need delicious pork chops in my life on a regular basis. That's all I need. Anything else is just sort of, well, I would say gravy, but no, I just take them straight up. I take them straight up.
Nice.
I want to get to the USDA stuff. We got reports coming out in less than 30 minutes here. Do you want to talk about some of the Biden stuff real quick? You sort of teased that. We've got a moment. Three policy measures. Announced in Illinois yesterday, doubling funding for domestic fert production, greater access to farm management tools, and efforts to increase the number of counties eligible for double cropping insurance. Go.
Okay. Number one, doubling up on the support for fertilizer production, going from $250 to $500 million. That is not immediate relief. It takes years. To first clear the red tape that, by the way, President Biden added to very recently when he signed the executive order. You know, he's sending everybody out to go on the infrastructure tour to talk about all the projects that are going while he sits back in his office and signs an executive order that makes it more difficult to get those projects done. It's shocking to me. So pumping up the money for the fertilizer is not going to have an impact on fertilizer prices right now. It just isn't. Now, if you produce winter wheat, and I've been talking with Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer about this, but if you are in a county that produces winter wheat and has that history of winter wheat production, that county is eligible for double crop soybean insurance. All right? Already. So by extending the availability of double crop insurance to an additional 681 counties, they're not growing winter wheat. How are you going to double crop them this year? And to do that, if it was for an effort this year, you would also have to waive the deadlines, all of them, and go back and make that double cropping available, that double crop insurance available. But you'd have to waive all those deadlines. I can't imagine doing that. The 681 counties that they are adding, if they don't have a history of winter wheat production, they can't double crop anything, not this year.
Yeah.
So maybe what that is it is incentive to prepare to grow some winter wheat and seed winter wheat this fall after the harvest, and then have the opportunity to double crop beans next year in 2023. That's the only way that this could provide any incentive. By then, this food crisis may be over. There are things happening around the world that have redirected flows of grain. We know that. The biggest thing being Russia's invasion of Ukraine. But the flows are adjusting. And they're adjusting at a rate that, to me, is somewhat alarming. This bean oil market, I think, is in real danger. I mean, it made a real, it, it, an incredible run up past 90 cents. But I think that market may be in danger. So, okay, I'm going to say your name, Ken. Just got a text from Ken. He says it's all political. And it is. It is smoke and mirrors, guys. There, to the non-farming listeners out there that are saying, well, boy, President Biden in the White House, they're really trying to do things to get rid of the or to prevent the food crisis around the world. I just don't get it. They're not. It is whitewash on windows. And
well, and we can talk at so another time, perhaps at length, whether this is window dressing or optics or whether it's just genuine lack of misunderstanding. I think probably the answer is somewhere between the two of those or includes both.
Well, but it's lack of misunderstanding. It's a lack of understanding.
A lack of understanding. Yes. Excuse me. I misunderstood what I understood. I said yes. Is what happened. See, it can happen to anyone. I mean,
perfect.
You know.
Perfect. Right. Okay.
Let's just keep this really simple. You said potential to be the reports, a potential to be a trend accelerator or a trend changer. Take us over to corn. What are you expecting here? Big explosions. What numbers are you watching?
Well, I'm a couple of things on corn. We've got to go to the South American numbers, I think, first, and the Brazilian corn crop estimate. The highest trade guess on the Brazilian corn crop estimate is 116.5 million metric tons. The lowest is 110 million metric tons. The average comes in at just a little over 114 million metric tons. Now, in April, the estimate was at 116 million tons. And since April, all we've been talking about is the number getting smaller.
Right.
So I think it's got – if it comes – I can't believe that it would come in above the average trade guess. I think it comes in below the average trade guess. Somewhere in that 113, maybe even a 112. This is the time of the year where USDA can't wait any longer. They can't wait any longer. If there are big adjustments to be made on South American production numbers, this is the month that you've got to get aggressive with it. So that's where I'm going first. That's where I'm going first. Now, where I'm going second is I'm going to look at that the yield that USDA puts on corn.
I was just going to ask you that. Yes.
Yep.
You like the 181 still?
I if it's anything but 181, it's a market mover. If it's anything but 181, it is a market mover. 181 is what USDA is going to use. They didn't change it in 2019. The last time that they changed from trend line was 2013. If they didn't change it a year ago or in 2019 with planning delays as serious as they were, they're not going to stray from that number right now. So those are the two big things that I'm looking at.
Okay.
The carryover projection for new crop, because it's the first one that we are getting. I think USDA at the Ag Outlook Forum was 1.965 billion bushels. It's going to be way, way, way under that because of the lower than expected acres in the prospective plantings report.
Let's talk beans. I'm uneducated. Help me. What are you expecting on a bean yield to come out here?
51.5
on beans.
Yep. On more acres. More acres than USDA projected at the Ag Outlook Conference. They anticipated back in February 88 million planted. The prospective plantings report was 3 million acres more than that, 91. And USDA projected a 305 on the carryover for the 2022-23 marketing year. Put 3 more million harvested acres on there at 51.5. I mean,
yeah,
it's got the potential to be a number that is a little shocking, I would say. A little shocking.
Okay. What else is on your radar in the beans?
Well, the Brazilian crop estimate, we need to finish up that and really zero in on what that is. In April, 125 million metric tons was the estimate. The average trade guess right now is 124.4.
Okay. Okay. Move us over to wheat. Run the table.
Yeah. Well, it's the winter wheat crop estimate is the, to me, that is the headline number in all of these reports. Is it's the first survey-based winter wheat crop estimate. And get this, for the, you can drive three semis through this range, dude. The highest trade estimate is 1.915 billion bushels. The lowest is 1.635 billion bushels for an average trade guess of 1.791 billion bushels. Just call it 1.8. So anything much different than 1.8 on the winter wheat crop, I'm sorry, that's the all wheat. The all wheat on the all wheat crop estimate is going to be a market mover. The range on the winter wheat crop goes from 1.146 up to 1.323 billion bushels. So just huge uncertainty on the supply side for wheat. Now obviously, that's why we've got $12.50 new crop spring wheat futures right now.
Scott Brown this afternoon to talk about it. I got that right?
No, Ben Brown.
Ben Brown. Sorry, yes. Wrong Brown.
From,
yes.
Yes, that's right. That's right. All right, so those are what to, the highlights of what to look for in the reports coming up at 11 o'clock. We'll talk farm safety next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's May 17th online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with us.
Standing by.
10 minutes from those reports from USDA. But first, let's talk about some farm safety issues. We've got Barbara Lee. Barbara is the director of the National Children's Center for Rural and Agricultural Health and Safety. Barbara, welcome to AgriTalk.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Glad that you are here. Okay, Barbara, tell us about the center. What it is, how long it's been around, and what kind of resources are available.
Sure. Happy to do that. Here in Marshfield, Wisconsin, we have the federally funded National Children's Center for Rural and Ag Health and Safety. We were formally established in 1997, but with federal funds from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. But prior to that time, we also had funds from the Marshfield Clinic, the National Farm Medicine Center, and another federal agency to begin the process of really looking carefully at what's going on with children and their safety in farming.
Okay. So currently established in 97, that means this is a big year for you.
That's right. So we're officially celebrating our 25-year anniversary and have a couple of things going on. And it's really given us time to reflect back at how did this all get started? What has changed in our work itself and in the workers and the work environment for children? So a lot of changes, a lot of good things happening, and a few challenges still ahead of us.
Okay. So as you have looked back and evaluated some of the changes, highlight a couple of those for us.
Sure. When we got started in this whole area, back in really in the 1980s, we had no idea how many kids were working in agriculture, how many were being injured. And it was really in 1996, Cheryl Tevis and Fink from Successful Farming published this landmark article. It was called "We Kill Too Many Farm Kids." And it really sent shockwaves through the farming community and had us all start looking at how often does this happen? How can it be prevented? And so it really helped us launch a national initiative and a national focus and a lot of coordination across different agencies and nonprofit groups, places like Farm Safety for Just Kids. And we all started working together on, first of all, understanding what's the scope of the problem.
Right.
And then next is like, what are the different perspectives on, is it really a problem? And then what can we do about it? So we started looking at research, injury surveillance, kind of national coordination, education, public policy, and looked at this from all different angles.
Okay. How are we doing now as an industry?
Well, we've come a long way. We had really good injury data for about 12 years, and it showed that the rates of injuries declined by about 60%. The rate of fatalities of children being dying in farm accidents has stayed fairly steady, despite the decline in number of farms and number of kids on farms. I think the most revealing thing is that for both injuries and deaths, more than half of them occur to kids who are not working. They're just bystanders.
Yep.
They're in the
yep.
farm environment. And this is where we see we need to really keep our focus. Certainly we care about that. We want to protect the kids who are working, and we believe work is good for them, inherently valuable for kids working in agriculture. But it's really, really important to match the child and the child's characteristics yep. with the
yes.
work at hand.
Yes. Excellent. Excellent. Which brings us to what I wanted, another topic that I wanted to get into is it's that time of the year. A lot of families are headed to the field during planting season. It mm-hmm. can be a dangerous time, can't it?
Absolutely. And the thing that's associated with the greatest number of deaths for young people is tractors and skid steers and, you know, moving implements and transportation. So really important that we factor in the dangers and the ability of a child, you know, to really handle machinery. And I always think about when things go wrong, are they going to be able to handle it? You know, bad weather, equipment failure, is that child mature enough to handle when things go wrong?
Right.
The other really important thing too, because people get busy and, you know, the farming becomes a priority. But we say it's important to be a parent first and a farmer second. And that means really adopting the principles of safety for all the kids.
Yes.
And, you know, I can't state it often enough about the little ones who really should not be in the work environment. Because when you're working, you got to focus on the work. And nearly every child who is injured or killed on a farm, there's an adult nearby.
Right.
It's not like they're not supervised, but it's just farming can get complicated and little kids are unpredictable.
And things can happen fast. Yeah. Things
exactly.
can happen fast. That's right. That's right. You've got a webinar coming up, right?
Right.
When is that?
Right. So the webinar is going to be partly a celebration of our 25 year anniversary. It'll be about a 15 minute slideshow showing the big steps along the way of the last 25 years, how things have changed, how our focus has changed on our work over 25 years. And then there will be three other guest speakers who also do agriculture safety and
okay.
with children. Yes.
Yeah, where do we go for more information on the webinar that you've got going?
It's posted on the website of the Children's Center, and
okay.
Or they can just contact
yeah.
our Children's Center.
Very good. Very good. It's May 19th. So, yeah, check out the National Children's Center for Rural and Ag Health and Safety. Barbara, great information. Thank you so much for making time for us this morning.
All right. Be safe. Be healthy.
You bet. Thank you. That's Barbara Lee, Director of the National Children's Center for Rural and Ag Health and Safety. We're right at it. The report is coming up. We're going to break it down and have all the details. Ben Brown from the